Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 83 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm your host, Neil Tyra. And today, for the second week in a row, we have a famous attorney from Louisiana, the great state of Louisiana, Parker Larison. Parker is also a personal injury attorney and just a little different in the sense that he comes from a small town in Louisiana, and we're going to hear how he's built a thriving personal injury practice in a small town of about 7,000 people through the use of a number of things, including a book that he wrote, a hardback book, no less, as opposed to some of our other guests who have written softcover books. So a very nice hardback book called The Accident Handbook, as well as using Facebook. Regular old Facebook account that he interacts with his community with, and that and a couple of other really interesting approaches to engaging his community are what has resulted in Parker being so successful and the reason I wanted to have him on the show today. Besides that, he's just a delightful guy to chat with. And so I'm hoping that you're going to enjoy this interview with Parker Larison. Parker Larison, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil.
I'm glad you could be with us today, Parker. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, you know, I'm back home. I'm a very small town lawyer. I live in Ponchatoula, Louisiana, which has a population of under 7,000 people. We are the self-proclaimed strawberry capital of the world.
How about that?
And, you know, I spent a little bit of time away from here going to school in New Orleans and Baton Rouge and up in your neck of the woods in Washington, where I briefly worked in Congress back in the 90s. And then I came back here to practice law. So it's been an interesting adventure, but I love it. I now have an office, which is a remodeled 100-year-old home. It's just three or four blocks from the house I grew up in and about five or six blocks from the house I live in now. So it's a small town Mayberry type practice.
Wow, that sounds really appealing. You know, I just spoke to your buddy Keith Magnus this morning for...
Yeah, very good lawyer.
Yeah, for an episode that will air in a couple of weeks. And, you know, so it's sort of like, Alex, I'll take, you know, famous New Orleans personal injury attorneys for 200, please, and get Keith and Parker. So it's great to have you with us. So you went to school in Baton Rouge. Did you immediately go into private practice, or did you take some time to do some other things?
No, I didn't. I started my career in the federal court system. I was really fortunate to get offered clerkships from a couple, you know, Louisiana legends.
Please don't tell me that you also graduated at the top of your class.
I was. Don't hold that against me. I was editor in chief of the Law Review.
Oh, God.
At one time, I was first in my class, but I did not hold on. But yeah, I've tried to shake loose those Law Review roots and you know, change my thinking.
As I told Keith, that's where you and I differ. I was not top of my class, and I did not have a number of judges offering me clerkships. But in any case, so you came up here to the Capitol to work.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I had gone to undergrad in at Tulane in New Orleans. So, of course, I love that city. And I know you do, too, because I saw you there for small firm boot camp. And it's just a great, great place to visit. And so I worked there in the district federal court, And then I went to work for the Attorney General back in Baton Rouge, where I had gone to law school at LSU, and had a great time there. But decided it was time to come back home. My father nearly died from a heart failure. Really dramatic story. We may or may not have time to get into today, but my dad's a retired sheriff, and he's still alive and with us and doing well. So
thank goodness.
I'll leave you that suspense.
Yeah.
But about a week before I took the bar exam, my dad was giving the eulogy for one of his captains who had just died. And as he's walking back down to sit next to my mother in the pew of the church, he falls out. He had a complete heart failure. He coded. They had to do CPR several times. And although I was already committed to go work for the judges, you know, I decided once those commitments were up, I was going to come back home, be nearer the family. He went on to retire not long after that. And it ended up being a big blessing in disguise because I love it here. And I couldn't see practicing law anywhere else or living anywhere else. So
that couldn't make your bar exam any more stressful, could it?
Well, you know, ironically, it took all of the stress off because, you know, who could fault the guy whose dad was in ICU?
Well, I suppose
while
you're right.
Yeah. Was going on. And, you know, as fortune would have it, they transferred him from the local hospital where I live about an hour north of New Orleans to a hospital that was, you know, just right downtown almost, you know, not far from where we were staying in the city. So it all worked out. And he had, you know, great doctors that saved his life. And, you know, he's doing well 15 years later.
So. Well, that's good. So I'm glad to hear that. So when you decided it was time to come back home, and you kind of had that in the back of your mind all along based on what happened to your dad, what were the opportunities like? I mean, did you know you were coming home to a place that was rife with the opportunity, or was this really stepping out on the plank for you?
It was walking the plank for sure. I did not have much idea. You know, when you go to law school, it's so theoretical. And I look back and my favorite class was probably sports law, you know,
yeah.
So I'm thinking, oh, I'll be a sports agent one day. Well, you know, I'd be bankrupt several times over in Ponchatoula, Louisiana, if I'd get that dream alive. So you spend a few years with a front door practice of sorts, meaning that any client that walks through the front door with a promise of paying you now or later is somebody that you'll represent. And I had your typical small town, hang a shingle on the wall, general practice. And I felt like I was a jack of all trades and a master of none. That was a tough way to make a living. You know, it was not that lucrative. I've always believed in the practice of law. You're striving to survive, you know, and then hopefully one day you can thrive. And if you don't do those two, you die. And I would say I was, you know, not thriving yet for sure, you know, survival practice for probably at least 5 or 10 years until, you know, I really developed a strategy that changed my life and changed my practice and really got me where I am today.
Yeah. You know, there's something a tad romantic, however, about that general practice in a small town, southern town. There's a guy who made a whole career out of writing books about that.
Sure.
Over in a neighboring state. So how did you come to land on personal injury law?
Well, through personal experience, you know, when you're doing maybe 10 different types of law, you get a feel pretty quickly for the stuff you really hate, you know. And so it's easy to shed those cases. You know, they just, you know, you just dread taking them. But there are probably going to be a few things that you like. At least that was the case with me. And then over time, I think you see just some bits of justice up close. And maybe it's just a way of shedding light on something from a different angle. But for me, it was when I saw my mom go through her own car accident.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was just one of those things where, when I saw the insurance companies doing to my mom what I'd seen them do to so many other clients, it got personal. And suddenly I could see it through, you know, the lens of the affected client, or at least the family, you know, one step removed. And I just decided this is important work. It's all I want to do. Thankfully, at that point in my career, I was able to get enough of it to pay the bills. So, you know, I stopped taking every other kind of case. And I, you know, dug in and wrote a book on it. And then that book and the, you know, marketing that accompanied it has really changed my practice, and everything took off from there.
So niching down into personal injury, opened up more avenues for you than staying as a general practitioner. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think, you know, I like to look at it kind of like, you know, you were mentioning it's romantic when you're talking about being a general practitioner, but it's not that romantic when you're doing it. And, you know, I look to our, you know, friends in the medical profession, and I saw a world where, you know, everybody was specializing. When your knee hurts, you go find the best orthopedist you can find. You don't go to your family doctor and say, hey, check out my knee, you know, get out your saw and go to work. And it was weird to me that at least in rural areas like this, there were very few lawyer specialists. You know, for example, Louisiana only allows like four practice areas for legal specialization. You know, if you're a family lawyer, an estate planning lawyer, a tax lawyer. I may be missing one, but I know four or five things. You know, you cannot by law specialize in personal injury law in Louisiana, you know, and be a certified specialist.
And just to be clear there, when you say specialize, that means in your state obtaining a certification as a specialist in that area of law, correct?
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
'Cause not everybody has it. Like, for instance, here in Maryland, you can't specialize. There's no such thing as being a specialist. And in fact, to do so is an ethical breach. There's to claim to be a specialist.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's the way it was here. Yeah. Recently, the courts now allow you to call yourself a specialist
if you do.
But they only allow you, you know, to become a truly board certified specialist, or and board certification may be the wrong term, but a certified specialist in a few areas.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the areas that are being practiced are not covered by our specialty program. But what I saw was, even if I can't legally call myself a specialist, and even if I cannot obtain a board certification in my state, I could still effectively specialize by focusing only on one thing. And I felt like a jack of all trades, a master of none. You know, a specialist is going to just do a better job, you know, if they focus on one thing. So that was my goal when I converted, you know, because I felt like every time I was going to court, you know, when I was a general practice lawyer, Mondays may be, you know, DWIs in criminal court. And I was facing a prosecutor that did nothing but prosecute DWIs and other crimes, you know, in that realm in front of that judge all the time. So he was a specialist and I was a generalist. And then when I sent my settlement demand into an insurance defense lawyer in a PI case, again, he was the specialist, I was the generalist, and so on. And I think you know, it helped things when I was able to focus on one practice area. But it certainly was, you know, tough to do in the moment when you were talking about cutting off revenue streams that you felt like you really needed.
So again, you're out there on the plank now saying, okay, I think this is the better way to go. It certainly is, you know, a leap of faith to say, no, I can't take your, you know, criminal defense case because I'm trying to focus down into personal injury. So how did you then start to recast yourself as a personal injury attorney? What marketing tools did you use to identify yourself and brand yourself as focusing on personal injury?
The easiest transition was probably the internet, because we could just take down the old general practice website and put up a new injury-only website pretty quickly, pretty inexpensively.
Now, did you do your own website?
No, I hired an excellent person out of New Orleans, Megan Hargroder Graham. I believe she's about to move to Portland, but Megan did a great job on that.
Okay.
And, and I met her through our friend Ernie Svensson at Small Firm Boot Camp. She was one of the speakers, and she did that.
And is she the same, your current website?
Yes.
That she did?
Still with her, still happy.
Great.
She does a great job. Facebook was you know, probably our biggest marketing victory, so to speak, in that we were able to build for a town our size, for an area like we have, a pretty big following. And, you know, because you can create your own message on Facebook, you can kind of get the word out. Here's what we're doing.
Sure. So let's explore that a little bit. So first you change the website, and so you have a different appearance to the world through your website. And then you focused in on a social media platform like Facebook. Were you running ads or just creating your professional page and sharing information about your firm through that page?
It was the latter, because I could not have afforded ads at that time, for sure. But I'll tell you what we did. The kind of play was this. We changed the website, put a blog on there, and then I used you mentioned, we'll get to my book later, but I did kind of what I call the blog to bait to book program. You know, if I had a spare hour, I would sit down and write a blog, let's say 300, 500 words, you know, whatever I could write, maybe in a window on the weekend or before or after work. And, you know, that was good because it could build up our SEO a little bit, and it was free. All it took was my time and knowledge.
Sure.
And energy.
Content marketing.
You got it. Content is king, right?
Yep.
So we'd put that on the website, then maybe dress it up with a little bit of a stock photo or something, put it on the Facebook page. And then when I'd done that enough times, because I started with kind of an outline, I always knew I wanted to write a book once we decided to make that jump. And so, say, maybe doing that 10 times, I had enough info for a free report. So then I would hire a graphic artist, you know, slap some covers on it, get it looking pretty, and put that on the website. So that, you know, and that's what I call bait, something that, and bait, you know, is probably too pejorative of a term, but what I'm looking for is valuable content and info that a client would want that they could get for free. So as an injury lawyer, the first one we would start with would be 7 simple steps to fix your car, because we know somebody who got wrecked in their car, truck, whatever, and, you know, they need to get that fixed or replaced pretty quickly. And that was valuable content we could give them. And then, you know, after a lot of that, we had enough for a book, and we published a book.
So, and we're getting closer here. So you used the blog content that you already had and repackaged some of it into a lead magnet, a special report or a free report that people could then download, I'm assuming in exchange for providing their email address.
Exactly.
And so you built up an email list of people who had visited your website or who had downloaded your lead magnet, one or more. And now you had an email list that you could now market directly to.
Exactly.
Did you do email marketing through that list, or did you just?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, we used Infusionsoft for that.
Oh, so you really jumped in.
Well, yeah. For a while, I was donating to Infusionsoft before we actually learned how to use it and got. It's a great program, but you're right. It's a lot of horsepower, and probably too much for me when I bought it. But we like it now. What we did was we used lead pages.
Yep.
You know, so if you went, for example, right, accidenthandbook.com would be our lead page we'd use now. Go there, leave your email, and you'd get the free book. Or at that point, it was just a free report. And then it would go into Infusionsoft, and Infusionsoft would automatically send a series of emails to folks. And when they were asking for the book, they let us know, I got in an accident, and they checked that box. Or I did not get in an accident, but I'm curious, and they checked that box. And our response would depend on what they told us.
On your landing page, your lead page's landing page, you also capture the information as to whether or not they had recently been in an accident or they're just kind of looking for general information.
Yeah.
Well, that's brilliant.
And what we do there, because if they're just looking for information, because what happened was, you know, over the years, we've gotten a lot of requests from other lawyers.
I was going to say that the most typical person who would download that report would be another lawyer who'd want to see
right.
That content.
And I'm happy to share that.
But that's not who you want to market to as a potential client.
Right, right. So, for example, you know, this is the first time I've been on a national podcast. So, you know, this I may get some you know, requests from your podcast. So, and I'm happy to send anybody listening all the info I have. But it wouldn't be that cost effective for me to send them a hardcover copy of the book. You know, that would cost too much. So that's why we do that. And so what we do is, if they say they're in an accident, we get their email, and then we ask them if they'd like a hardcover copy of the book. And many would say yes, and that's when we get their actual address. And if we have that physical address, that mailing address, we could send them that book, and then we have that asset to send them other information.
Sure. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work you have to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that strengthens your practice and can save you hours each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and more cases without adding stress or chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. No more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. And Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone on your team is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight and be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Getting a new website design can be a real pain point for attorneys. You're busy practicing law and running your firm, and the last thing you can afford is to waste time dealing with an incompetent design team that doesn't understand what you're trying to accomplish. So if you've been putting off that new website for your law firm, I get it. But what if I told you that getting a new website created for your law firm doesn't have to suck? My friends at Spotlight Branding pride themselves on their responsiveness, on great communication, and on delivering results for their clients. And unlike many law firm marketing companies out there, Spotlight Branding doesn't lock their clients into long-term contracts. In fact, they offer a no-risk, money-back guarantee on their work so you can have total peace of mind while you work with them. I trust the team at Spotlight Branding, as you know, to build and manage my website, as well as manage my social media strategy, my monthly email newsletter, and a whole lot more. I recommend them to solo and small firm attorneys every chance that I get. They're currently offering a special gift for our listeners, so visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE to learn more. Brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. All right, so now let's get to the book. So you've gotten some content that you've generated. You start working on an outline. What was the genesis of the idea behind the book to start with?
Well, to start with, I noticed that there were a lot of personal injury books written by lawyers for other lawyers, you know, professors writing for their classes in law school, lawyers writing for other lawyers at practice, you know, judges. But there were not many resources, and in Louisiana, I don't know really of many or any, that were focused on the client's perspective. So my idea was to take tort law and write it for people that did not even know what a tort is. And so we don't have any Latin, we don't have any case citations, we don't have any statutory references. It's just a basic, here's what you need to know. I use the example, it's a lot, my hope is that it's like the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting, but rather than for pregnant people, for people that got in a car accident. And, you know, I think back to when my wife got pregnant with our first child, you know, the week before or the year before, you could not have paid me money to read What to Expect When You're Expecting. I just had zero interest. It was, you know, not on my mind. But when we found out she was pregnant and we were on vacation at the time, I immediately downloaded the audiobook to my phone so I could listen to it on the way back. You know, suddenly this info was really interesting to me.
Very relevant.
But I didn't want some medical treatise written for an OBGYN about how to deliver a baby. You know, I needed it to be practical and easy to understand for somebody that was too dumb to get into medical school, so he had to go to law school.
That's a great analogy, because I don't know anybody who, as a parent, who hasn't worn that book out. So,
it's great.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a great analogy. Perfect.
But let me say real quickly, Neil, my book's not that good. So that was the hope and the goal. But
well,
I did not achieve that.
I'm kind enough, or you're kind enough, to have sent me a copy. I'm sitting here holding it in my hand. And I got to tell you, I've got a lot of books written by guests. This is my first hardback book from a guest. What made you choose to go in that direction?
Well, you know, this book's actually my third overall book. It's my first in personal injury law.
Oh, now you're showing off, Parker.
Yeah, well, the reason I mentioned that is to let you know that the first two were not hardback.
Okay.
And it basically, you know, if you don't mind, I'll share maybe some bad decisions I made on becoming an author for the first few times around.
Absolutely.
You know, the first time I fell for the West trap, you know, I was contacted by West. They said, oh, you know, we think it'd be great for you to write a book with a bunch of other, lawyers that are great. And, you know, it was an ego play. Those guys are smart. They played an attorney's ego, and I fell for it and I did it. But it wasn't a very good deal because at the end of the day, West owns the copyright.
They own the content.
I remember having to pay them. I think I had to pay them about $1,000 just to buy back the rights to put a copy of my chapter on my website. You know, so I was paying them for my book chapter that I'd written. They're just good businessmen there, so, and women there. So, I'm not complaining, but it was a mistake that a novice would make.
I think we call it a lesson learned.
Yeah, lesson learned. So the next time I hooked up with a great company, I think based out of Pennsylvania, Word Association. I believe Tom Costello is the owner. And they did a great job. But, you know, and we printed a book that I liked a lot. But again, it was really expensive to do hardcover copies. So we went with paperback. This last book, Accident Handbook, we actually used we basically did kind of a DIY approach where we found our own printer and we did everything ourselves from designing the cover to laying out the book, et cetera. But we were able to get really inexpensive hardcover copies. And I felt like that would make a better impression because in the world of personal injury, I'm not giving a ton of books out every year. You know, I mean, I couldn't handle hundreds of cases if I could get them. So, you know, it makes sense that I could spend a little more. And we were able to get a good price because we did so much ourselves, and the hardcover we felt like was a better feel to it.
Well, it makes an excellent presentation. It gives and look, it's not an insubstantial book either. This is not a hardcover book with 30 pages in between. You know, it's a significant piece of work that you've performed, a little over 300 pages. So. That's a lot of blog posts. Now, it's a really substantive product. How has that changed, or what has that done for your marketing?
Well, yeah, I think what it's done is helped me be viewed as an authority in that practice area. Louisiana is no different than any other part of the country in that personal injury is incredibly competitive. You know, sure. We've got folks in the big city. I'm an hour north of New Orleans and about 45 minutes east of Baton Rouge. And those are incredibly competitive markets that overlap into my little town where we've got giant billboard lawyers that run tons of TV ads. And I mean, we've got TV lawyers suing each other over the e-guarantee versus the g-guarantee and all this stuff where people are spending millions of dollars on marketing that I could never approach. And, you know, what this did was give me kind of a clear contrast. You know, I could never compete with their ad buy dollars. But, you know, it's a talking point. I became the lawyer that wrote the book on it. That doesn't make me the best lawyer, of course, but it's something that demonstrates I knew at least enough to put that book together. And then they could look at that book and if they thought it's, you know, was a good product, maybe I'd do a good job with their case, would be the hope. But it just helped. It was a game changer. That's why I'm happy to talk to you today, because I know a lot of folks are thinking about it and wondering, does it deliver it results? And I'm here to tell you, it changed my life. It helped me, you know, create, you know, I won't say a big personal injury practice, but a respectably big enough personal injury practice in a tiny town of less than 7,000 people.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that practice for a second, because as I note on your website, you're not a one-man shop. You got some folks on your team. Tell us about your staffing and how broken things down.
Well, I'm blessed with a great associate attorney. Her name's Megan Notriana, and she's wonderful. She's a first-year lawyer who worked for me as an assistant, and actually she began here as an intern probably six years ago, and she does a great job. She's my right-hand woman. And then I have a great staff, a paralegal that's been with me 4 or 5 years, Joe. He's awesome. Joe Dunham's, just a great team. And it's certainly not a one-man show. And, you know, our clients are happy, and the staff is probably the biggest reason for that.
You know, and I when I noticed when I was reviewing your website, you know, those folks. But you've also got folks like Angela, your community relations coordinator, and Brittany, your communications specialist, and Paul, your community relations assistant, that's an awful lot of folks touching the community. What do they do, and how does that enhance your practice?
Thank you for mentioning them all so that nobody's forgotten and I don't get in trouble if anybody listens to this.
Well, no, because I really like it that you have, you know, it's clear you're focusing on your relationship with your community.
Yeah, well, that's a big part of what we do here. They run programs like something I copied from a great lawyer out of Ohio, Chuck Boyk. Many of your listeners may know of him and his team. They do a great Bikes for Kids program. And so we basically, with their permission, have copied their program and drawn from it and, you know, been inspired by it.
What's that all about?
In the summertime, we give away a bike every week to kids. And so then my team reaches out to the community, to local schools, to local churches, just anywhere they can, and says, hey, we're giving bikes away to great kids. Nominate a kid. And it can be a kid who's great because he takes care of his sick little brother, or a kid that's great because they're an honor student that encourages others, you know, whatever. But basically, grown-ups nominate kids. Sometimes they're their own children. Sometimes they're a kid from a church group or whatever. And then we choose, you know, inspiring stories, and we give those kids bikes. And then, you know, we're starting a new program inspired by a client of ours who has triplets. And, of course, when you get in a car wreck, you have to replace your car seats. And when I noticed the staggering cost of that, we said, hey, let's do a program where we give away car seats to single moms. And, you know, so my team gets out there and just, you know, does stuff like that to try to help the community, you know, teacher of the month awards at the high school, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think that is so important, Parker, and it's such an underlooked aspect of business development, you know, giving back to the community in a way that, look, you're not expecting a kid who gets a bicycle to come in and be a future client of yours, but you are showing that you're part of the community, and as such, the community is going to respect that. And I think, you know, it's karma. It pays dividends 10 times over.
I think you're right. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with that great book by Bob Berg, The Go-Giver.
Yeah.
You know, I try to draw from principles like that. You know, my parents raised me to believe you reap what you sow. And, you know, I think if we put enough good out there and provide our communities with enough value, we're going to get the cases, you know, just kind of naturally, they're going to come our way. If we're doing good work and our clients are giving us good reviews and we're, you know, and we're doing right for the community.
I have a friend, Yannick Silver, who takes that to a corporate level, you know, and works with companies to help them develop a charitable cause or a charitable underpinning to their endeavors, and argues that that's what sets them apart from, you know, companies that don't have that same viewpoint. And I think you can extend that down to businesses like ours. If you're out there in the community and you're giving back, it's going to come back tenfold.
I think you're right. And the other thing it does is it really inspires your staff. I mean, if you could see the electricity in the air at our office on a bike giveaway day, you know, we do it 12 weeks of the year, you know, for the summer months. And it makes me wish we did it all 52, because the staff's just so excited. And we rotate. So I'm not the front man giving the bike away every time, you know, every member of the team gets an opportunity to do it. And you see these kids, their faces just light up, and, you know, they just, it's the best.
Of course.
And the best days of work I get out of my staff all year are those 12 days.
And like I said, it pays dividends in so many ways. Here you're inspiring your staff, and they're going to want to stay with you and support you and your endeavors, because this is special and important to them. And they create their own identity through this type of program. I know you think that your book is the cornerstone of your success, but I got to tell you, I think it's your relationship with your community that's really, you know, the thing that can be pointed to as being instrumental.
You may be right. It's I certainly could not succeed without a supportive community. So about 87% of our cases come to us by referral. So you know, we're mindful of that. And,
well, tell me a little bit about technology. What role does that play in your firm?
a big role. I'm by no means a tech guy, as you know, because I had a little tech trouble getting online with you here today.
However, I mean, you're using Fusionsoft. So if you do that, you got to be tech savvy in some way.
What I've learned is if you're not tech savvy yourself, hire good people who are. So you asked earlier what Paul and Stephanie and some of the other folks on my team do, that you can probably tell from their pictures. They're younger and better looking than I am, as they know technology. We mentioned Infusionsoft. We basically have a mix here of Apple products and PCs. I'm all Apple myself, from the iPhone to the iPad to the MacBook.
Well done. Yep.
And I know, you know, like you, I'm a self-described fanboy, but I allow the members of my team to determine what they want to use. So our other attorney, Megan, she's into Apple. She uses that. Everybody else, I think, is on a PC, and they have Droid phones, and some have a mix, an iPhone with a PC computer. But the stuff we use software wise, we're using a lot of Infusionsoft, which you can use both for marketing and for case management tasks. We use Smartsheet to help keep us organized. We use Asana for task management.
Okay. So task management is Asana. That's, you know, that's a program that's got a lot of interest from a lot of folks, but isn't really high on the radar.
I think lawyers tend to always want things that are created for law firms and legal, you know, specifically. And what I found was, as a firm that does nothing but contingency injury work, you know, a lot of traditional case management software horsepower is not needed by me. You know, we don't bill by the hour. We have a lot of, you know, things we don't. So we've just kind of found some workarounds where we use a combo of these other products.
But what you do need, if you have a significant caseload, is you need to be able to track all the tasks associated with those cases and all the appointments you have to maintain. And because, you know, you can't be missing a court date, can't be missing a discovery deadline. So Asana is perfect for that.
Yeah, it works great. And, you know, we have backups that are a little more traditional, you know, like such spreadsheets. You know, we use the Google suite of products. So we're using Google Sheets, right, you know, rather than Excel.
Is that so that you can use them in collaborative ways?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So in other words, you can share Google Sheets, whereas it's more difficult to share, you know, a standalone spreadsheet.
Right. And you can, you know, work it in real time. You know, Megan can be making changes in red while I'm making changes in blue on the same document. And we can see our work. You know, same thing for, you know, document production. We'll use Google Docs. So, you know, I'm not in any way the cutting edge tech guy, but we're happy with the products we have. They've been working, and they allow us to work from anywhere. I mean, we can run the whole practice from an iPhone or an iPad, you know, if we need to. I didn't mention financial, but QuickBooks is what we use there.
Okay. Are you in the cloud with QuickBooks? QuickBooks cloud,
yes.
Implementation.
Yes.
And how about accounting? Do you use a separate accounting, either software pack beyond QuickBooks, or do you have a bookkeeper that you use? Or
I have a bookkeeper. He just walked out off my porch. I saw him come out through the window. My best friend growing up is an accountant, and he's my bookkeeper.
Outstanding.
So in a Mayberry town like this, Tuesdays is our bookkeeping day. So that's when he comes by and we meet.
Well, I won't keep you much longer here. You did mention earlier using Facebook. Is that your primary social media outlet, or do you use?
It is, and I'm glad you asked, because the one thing I'd like to share, in case this is similar with any of your other listeners, is that I found there's kind of, you know, regional differences, maybe, or at least community differences with social media. You know, I started off kind of following the playbook that I've read from national experts. And so we were doing Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everything. And what I learned was, in our little sleepy southern town, not many people are using Twitter. I don't get it. I love Twitter. I use it all the, you know, but they just weren't engaging there. But Facebook for us was taken off like gangbusters. So I probably liken it to fashion, you know, something that's in the fashion world gets to Ponchatoula, Louisiana, about 5 or 6 years after it hits Manhattan and LA and, you know, Milan and all those places. Probably the same with social media. But Facebook has just been great for us. We have over 3,000 followers. We have very, very active engagement. Our engagement often exceeds that of the big, you know, dollar New Orleans and Baton Rouge lawyers that are spending millions on their marketing. But, and I don't, it's not because I'm particularly great at it. I think, you know, it's just, we have a community that likes Facebook. For some reason, they like the stuff we put on there, whether it's free bikes or whatever.
I think the real answer there, just my opinion, is that lawyers have historically, and even more recently, kind of shied away from Facebook. You'll hear them say, well, I maintain a LinkedIn page because that's professional. But Facebook, you know, I have a personal Facebook account, but I don't do anything with my law firm on Facebook. And I always wonder, why the heck not? You know, if you want to go where the people are, if you want to talk to where the, you know, with people who are talking, if you want to engage them, they're on Facebook, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, why would you ignore that? You don't have to be, you know, a sleaze about it and populate everybody's Facebook feeds with ads for your law firm, but legitimate and reasoned connection and articulation through Facebook, I think, is perfectly justifiable. And here you're proving just that. 3,000 followers to your Facebook page. I mean, that's spectacular. You can do more with that than you can with just about any other online advertising platform.
And I think you're right. Your comment earlier about the community involvement, I think that's where the key is with Facebook. And so your content kind of has to mirror what the community is looking for. Though, you know, I did not get many, you know, one great thing about Facebook is you can micromanage, you know, your posts and determine all kinds of great feedback and performance indicators. And what I learned was people aren't on Facebook, you know, for legal tips so much. They're on there to look at pictures of cute kittens and, you know, free tickets to the ball game or whatever. So without getting too cheesy, and most lawyers probably think I am too cheesy if they look on my Facebook, and I'm okay with that because I'm not looking for most lawyers to hire me. You know, if my mom and dad are proud of me and, you know, I'm not breaking any ethical rules.
And you're putting food on the table.
Yeah. You know, I can live with lawyers, you know, criticizing it. But I guess what I'm getting at here is, you know, if you realize that if you're okay with going on Facebook and trying to get some work there, just keep in mind your content needs to reflect what people want on Facebook. You know, they don't want a picture of a crashed vehicle scaring them saying, oh, you're going to lose, you know, you're going to go bankrupt from medical bills. You know, they want to see me with my kid going to the zoo for the field trip last Friday or whatever, you know. So if you're happy sharing that.
They want to connect with you personally.
Yeah, you're right.
People hire those that they know, love, and like, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's common sense. I don't understand attorneys who shy away from it, but that's just me. And I'm glad to see that it's working tremendously well for you.
Thank you, Neil.
Parker, it's been a delight having you on. I can't wait to come back down to Louisiana to eat all that good food and chat with folks like you and Ernie and Keith, you know, as soon as I can. So I'm looking forward to it.
You got an open invitation anytime. Thank you so much for letting me be part of this incredible podcast. It's really great.
All right, my friend. Thanks so very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through the Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.